future.
There are no people.
There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome once again. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop Live from Monday, July 19th, 2021. On Out to Coop Live, well, we talk to progressive activists and troublemakers from all sorts, from our own backyards, from across the country. On Friday, Sean Kitchen and I break down the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics as part of our Friday Politics Roundup. And check out the Wednesday show with Cyril Michalako. Cyril is a progressive columnist from the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer. He joins me to drill down into Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and international politics. You can get all our shows by subscribing to our podcast on Podbean, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. You can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. And if you're listening to this show on the Podbean app, well, you can also hit that patron button and help support this show as well. You can help boost in the reach of this show by heading on over to our YouTube channel, if you're not there already, and smash that subscribe button, hit the like for the stream of this show, and hit that notification bell so you'll know every time that we go live. We are broadcasting live on Riverside.fm. Join us on Riverside.fm, and you can call in during the second half of the show. I'll have a little bit more of information for you about how that happens just in a little bit. For more PA Progressive Talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, or wherever you get your podcasts, or, you know, wherever you get your streams, actually. You can also get his podcast, his daily podcast. And huge news, Rick has got a brand new show at WBAI in New York City. Yes, from 6 to 8 p.m. The voice of the working class is making it to New York City's airways. Yep, join him on WBAI on Saturdays from 6 to 8. Freaking awesome. Congratulations to Rick. And you got to check out the newly launched, well, it's not so new anymore, is it? No, the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast, the amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. Spooky, right? Make sure to follow them on Twitter at The Night Caucus and subscribe to their podcast on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. You got there. And for the gamers out there, yes, The Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything for retro N64s, latest consoles, video games for all platforms, loads of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops. And the kids, well, you know, if they did great on their report card and still have got it hanging around, well, you know, they get it a discount for every A on their report card. Check them out on their Facebook page, The Game Inn, and or, you know, follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn, again with two N's. Got a question, you want to find out something you're looking for, head on over and send them an email to thegameinpa@gmail.com. And a special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. And check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at Songadayman, again with two N's, at Songadayman on Twitter. Now, on tonight's show, I welcome student activists to the show, Paul Brillette, Monica Zhang, and it's a surprise guest, yes, Nick Marcel is here once again. He was able to join us, which I'm freaking thrilled about, so that we're all here. And we're going to be talking about last week's Posse's Board of Governors vote to approve the mergers of six state system universities into two. Yes, everybody, it's happened. I think it was predictable, but it has happened. But Paul Brillette is a senior at Kutztown University studying secondary English education, my fault. He is a member of Kutztown student group KU Activists. We've had him on the show before, and as well as a member of PASHI Defenders. Monica Zhang is an undergraduate at Westchester University. She's a member of PASHI Defenders and a member of the Party of Socialism and Liberation. And Nick, yes, Nick Marcel, once again, co-founder of PASHI Defenders, has been on the show, friend of the show. Welcome, everybody. These students are committed to the power of popular organizing and direct action to better the situation of working class people, especially students and those working in education. Now, at the end of the show, right, so we're going to run this. You remember the new format of the show, right? We're going to have about a 45-minute discussion rounding there. Then we'll kind of let you know that you can hit those, try to, if you're watching us on YouTube right now, there's information in there for the last kind of, say, 15 minutes or however it goes. You can actually call in to Riverside and kind of join the conversation for the last half of the show. So welcome, Paul, welcome, Nick, and welcome, Monica. How's everybody doing this evening?
Good. Thanks for having
Pretty
us.
Good. Yeah, thank
hey, you.
You
got it. Now, I got to say, I'm going to, Monica, I want to start with you, in part because you're like the newest to the show here, right? You know, I'd love to get your perspective a little bit first, a little about how you've approached this, what got you kind of involved with, this issue around Pashim. You're a student at Westchester University, but give us a little context about how you see this stuff and how you got involved with these issues.
Wow. Well, first, I guess, thanks for having me.
Oh, you got it.
This is very exciting. the Party of Socialism and Liberation, we really wanted to get involved because we see this struggle of the mergers, which has now, I guess, is official, but nothing's really set in stone in time, I guess. We see this as a working class struggle. There were 1,500 jobs slated to be cut, and that's not even including the retrenchments that happened before the vote, and all the people that got laid off before, and the budget cuts and the program cuts and everything. And we see it as a working class issue, not only for the workers, but also for the students, because, you know, tuition's only going up when really it should, education should just be funded by the government, and it higher education, you know, what is the difference between having free K-12 education versus having free higher education, especially if that is how people get certified to become K-12 teachers? So we really thought this was an issue that, especially since some of our members do go to Pashi schools as students, and some of us are employed by Pashi as workers and as faculty members, that this was something worth pursuing. And we had a connection with Nick, who I went to high school with, which I think is very fun. It just kind of all fell together.
Very cool. Now, Paul, you know, I remember, I mean, you've been working with KU activists, right? And we first kind of crossed paths back when we were first doing the Healthy Campus Bill of Rights. And since then, we've been through a pandemic. You guys got rid of a racist cop at Kutztown. and now here we are, you guys kind of joining the fight once again. When it comes to both these consolidations or mergers, whatever you want to call them, and the impact that they're going to have. So kind of walk us through a little bit about kind of, you know, where you are in all of this and what this has been like thus far for you.
Well, I mean, the struggle is always continuing, right? It's always going to continue and it changes. And this is just kind of an evolution of that change. I think me and Monica see it kind of similarly, as just an ongoing struggle and, you know, more cuts and making the situation worse and worse and worse for working class people and, you know, students and working class students, right? And as, you know, kind of bringing KUA into it, this is like the same sort of mismanagement that we've seen from President Hawkinson and his administration at Kutztown, just on, you know, kind of a state scale. Kutztown's made, you know, massive budget mistakes with including all these, you know, fancy buildings while letting other buildings languish and, you know, grow mold in them and just, you know, all this kind of other stuff and not supporting the students and raising tuition prices and not listening to the students unless there's a popular uprising or whatever you want to call what we were able to do last semester. And, you know, that's just, it's just kind of an extension of that, like those same neoliberal policies and not listening to the people that you're really trying to help, or you should be trying to help, right? So that's kind of my spiel.
Oh, cool. And Nick, I mean, I remember you were on the show right as you were kind of getting Poshy Defenders launched, right? It was kind of like, yep, we got our first meeting next, you know, later this week, and we're going to run with this. And since then, Poshy Defenders has been, I mean, literally all over the state, like really trying to, you know, draw attention to what's going on. And trying to provide, you know, I don't know if you see it this way, but providing to find a kind of virtual and real world meeting space for all these kind of different kind of constituencies and interest groups to try to figure out about how you move forward. I mean, what's this, how's this been for like you? I mean, you think about from that launch date to kind of where you sit now.
Yeah, no. And again, Kevin, thank you very much for having us and myself. Yeah, no, I definitely see it as, you know, something that has like grown in different ways. And I agree in terms of sort of having that common space to be able to bring people together. I do think like, you know, throughout the pandemic, we have sort of learned, oh, wow, we can utilize virtual spaces, but you know, it's not like that it is the most engaging or it's the most, you know, like fruitful and helpful for people in many different ways, but it can be a space nonetheless and a way in which we can get people across the state who have, you know, very similar concerns or, you know, interests as students, faculty and staff at these universities that, you know, their voice should be heard and that their voice matters. And, you know, understanding that, you know, the reason why we could say that this consolidation is able to go through is because, you know, the power was not fully amassed and organized in the way that it could have been or that, you know, we tried to do in certain ways. But, you know, as I say, like, you know, with any sort of activism or organizing work, these things take time. And that's exactly what I think that will continue to happen as we go on. And we'll, you know, see where things go.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, and when we get to, you know, later on in the show tonight, we want to talk about where things go from here, because I think that's a big question mark that a lot of people have at this point. And, you know, and I recognize that those are not necessarily questions that are fully, you know, decided. You know, I mean, I think there's multiple pathways and we're going to see different things on different campuses, depending on how they're located and things like this, and the ways that we're building these connections with communities, certainly. So why don't we just kind of take us back in time just a little bit. And because I want people listening to the show tonight to understand the kind of organizing that was happening leading up to the Board of Governors vote. Because you've probably all heard me say in one way or another, and a lot of people say, there was like frustration around the lack of pushback, like kind of early on, right? But, you know, thanks to you all, right, I would say, again, thanks primarily to a lot of amazing student organization, right? Yes, some faculty were a part of there. Community members were part of it, too, as well. Some staff members were part of this as well. But, I mean, I really do think that students and folks kind of located kind of in groups directly connected to you all have really been the ones who have pushed this issue. I mean, if you just look at the number of comments that are made and the call-in questions that were there, I mean, I heard your voices everywhere. I pick up any article about what's happening in Poshy, and one of you, or if not all of you, are being quoted, right? And sometimes it's just like another student from Westchester University or a Kutztown University student said, and I'm like, I know who that is. You know, it's like, so, I mean, I don't know who wants to take this first, but, you know, walk us back a little bit about the kind of leading up, you know, say in the kind of couple of weeks before that vote on the Board of Governors. I mean, what were you trying to do at that point, and how did that manifest in terms of kind of action? You know, who wants to take it first? Anybody want to jump in first?
I think Nick does.
I think, yeah. Well, yeah, Nick touched his nose, which usually means not it, but since we're
usually
kind of
not
in a virtual
it, but
world,
I guess, you know, I guess
way.
It means that's it.
It means that's me. It's pointing to yourself.
Well, all right. But on me, right?
We lose all depth perception in the virtual space. So you get.
Yep. Same thing. Right. Exactly. So like leading up to it in certain ways, and even leading up to like the public comments, was really, I'll start at least with the public comment first. You know, we at least first wanted to, you know, get as many folks as possible to go to those public comment sessions. And to, as you know, many of us, you know, like, you know, us here on this call and others, did, I think, beautifully, which was show that these people don't care. They, like, they did not care one bit of anything that we had to say. Like, I remember specifically that the chancellor and the chair had said that during these public comment hearings, at the end, they were going to pull out themes that emerged from the, you know, from the hearings. They never said anything in terms of themes. They never said anything in terms of what people said. The only time that they ever actually said anything realistically of substance after any of the hearings was after the first hearing, and that was the chair, Cindy Shapira, saying, you know, we've heard a lot of what it makes us know is that we need to do a better job at communicating.
Right.
And then they never really did any increased communication. They never really tried to, you know, do anything of the sort, right? And that's because these public comment hearings were totally, like, you know, a sham, or they were just totally, like, not going to be anything processed by any of them, anyone on the board, whatnot. So then it was, you know, sort of the understanding of that and, you know, trying to make the noise that we could at, you know, like doing some of these rallies or, you know, trying to get ourselves like, you know, into like certain op-eds and such, as well as calling different, like, you know, local elected officials to sort of get them to help build, I'll say, this like power or like, you know, this coalition of people who are against this, right? Because realistically, at the end of the day, one of the main reasons of why it was a unanimous vote for this is because Governor Wolf was totally for this plan. And the only way that we could even come close to even flipping some of them would be if we amassed enough power of, you know, of people, of elected officials, so on and so forth, to get that to flip. And that was not able to fully happen. And I think that we did do a good job at, even as Senator Schwenk had mentioned in her sort of spiel saying why she was voting for this, that she said that she talked to us because, minus Monica, because unfortunately she couldn't come because she's working like all of us are. You know, Paul and myself, as well as like some others, I think like we talked to Senator Schwenk in like a small group like discussion to tell her, you know, like, this is bad. And yet, at the end of it, she kind of comes out saying, all right, I'm going to, like, delay this. Like, that was sort of the vibe. And, you know, and it was like, okay, you know, that's good. That's a start. But it didn't go further, and it was hard to really press it further because, basically, you know, with this, like, pandemic and, like, you know, the environment, we're all separated, and it's hard to organize, and it's hard for students who are the ones particularly funding the universities. So we have such leverage if we can come together en masse to stop this, but it's hard to do that. And that's why it was all, you know, like, quote unquote, planned, or he went shopping, right, for this sort of moment and this way of doing things.
Exactly. Now, I think that, you know, what you just laid out there is, I think, a great place to start, too, because, you know, this is what I want people to hear. This was not just like online petitions and things like this. You had rallies, like, not just like in Harrisburg, but around the state at key locations, meetings with legislators, right? And that face to face. So we had a whole range of kind of like tactics. There was pressure from across the board. Paul, did you want to get in on that?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of going into this, and especially the public comment section, like Nick said, we knew, that they weren't going to listen. They never were. You know, everything they've telegraphed up to that point and after was just them, you know, going through the motions, following that Act 50 law, and just trying to get to the vote. And whatever backroom deals they had to get that unanimous vote, I don't know. Schwenk, in my opinion, what she did to us was, disgraceful. She came close to telling us. We were able to push her. It was me, Nick, some professors from Westchester, two Kutztown professors, and we just talked to some students. Not just me and Nick. There was a student from a university that was getting consolidated, and, you know, to her face, she was all, yeah, like, I think this has to be delayed. This, like, I didn't know all these facts, blah, blah, blah. And then she turns around and votes for the plan and just gives this long-winded excuse for why it's the right decision. Somebody needs to primary her. The unions need to stop giving her money, and she needs to be out of that Senate because she does not listen to the people. I wish I was 25 years old. Maybe I would primary her, but yeah. Like, it's not, like, she needs to go at this point. And, you know, maybe it's just because there is that personal communication, but that kind of rubbed me because I knew, and I think all of us privately knew that this was going to go through, no matter kind of what we did. But it was really awful that it was unanimous, and it was just asinine what she did. But to kind of take that from another direction, there wasn't just that understanding that they weren't listening to us. There was also a lot of other groups kind of coming and not really wanting to take like a direct action centered approach. And I won't name any of the groups, whatever, like we all do our things. But they didn't want to take that next step, or in some cases they legally weren't allowed to take that next step. So I think
that, by the way, I would say my opinion is that is a cop out. When people say they're legally not able to take, it is a cop out. And I can tell a little story about that later. I don't want to interrupt you, but that I've heard that so many times that it frustrates the living daylights out of me. But anyways.
Yeah, no. And like, just to get back to that, I think a lot of this and what we did a good job in, especially, and I do want to let Monica talk about this, is we did a great job at showing those people that playing by, you know, Chancellor Greenstein's rules, that's just not going to work. Right. Some of us know that already. Some of us knew that going into that. But I think what we really did is getting this broad coalition together and to kind of realize that this isn't like, we can't win like this. It's just impossible. They're not going to listen to us. They do not give a shit about the working class members of the community. Right. So we need to go outside of their rules and kind of make our own. Right. Make our own curl.
100%. You know, I think that on our Wednesday show with Cyril Mikulenko, we were talking about the miners' strike down in Alabama that's been going on over 100-plus days now. And one of the miners said, this playing nice shit ain't cutting it, right? And that's become pretty much the theme of this week. And, you know, Monica, on that, like, this playing nice shit just ain't cutting it. I mean, one of the things that, you know... what I constantly saw when you were, say, quoted in the newspaper or kind of like had the megaphone in your hand at these various rallies, right, is basically, you know, kind of along those lines about the need for resistance and need to push back. But, you know, I don't want to kind of steal the thunder, but this is one of the reasons I was psyched to hear, you know, that you're able to come on tonight, too, because, like, one on the obviously the kind of the fire that you're bringing to the table, but also kind of seeing this firmly as kind of a working class struggle where we needed to kind of, you know, basically show like alternatives to the inside game, if it were. So take it away from there.
Gosh. Okay. Well, I guess we could touch on the inside game. The PSL's stance from the beginning was that this was, of course, going to be the end result. Is we didn't know it was going to be unanimous. I mean, that's kind of like, it's almost comical because they needed to show us that hard that they have the power, that these capitalists have the power. The thing about the Board of Governors is they are, I mean, they're all capitalists or are on the side of the capitalists. And one of the positions that we hold in the PSL is that there's two classes, the capitalist class and the working class, and there's none of this like lower, middle, upper class. If you control the means of production, you are capitalist class, and if you're not, then you're working class. And, you know,
the rest of us.
The rest of us. Like, no matter how much money you have now, if you don't have control over how you make that money, you could be, you know, SOL, I'm at work, so I can't curse. The next day, you know, just like, what's that show? The one with Moira and, oh, the other one that I can't say, I guess, cause I'm at work, you know, the Creek one with Eugene anyway. So, you know, the Board of Governors, was largely appointed by Tom Wolf, who is a Democrat, which is hilarious. The Democrats are supposed to be for the people and they're not. And, as you can see that, and, you know, we hold the position that the people who voted no the first time probably were in those backroom deals, like Paul said, like told to vote no the first time. And the students who got appointed like a week before voting on this, like, you know, that's nonsense. And so one of the things that we, kind of knowing that this was going to be the outcome anyway, or highly suspecting, was that we wanted the working class people, you know, the rest of us, who were going to be slammed by these awful decisions and by these just like, just such brutal cuts to the communities that these six schools are in. We wanted those people to know that there were other people looking out for them. And actually, we had some meetings, and at first we were like, is Harrisburg, like, maybe we should have a rally in Harrisburg. And then we were like, that's too much of a stretch. No one will come. And then we realized, you know what, like, people will come if we build up to it. And so that was kind of what led us to go around to the six schools. And it was a lot of planning. It was a lot of phone mm-hmm. calls that, like, Nick and Paul and many other people and I made. And we're all, I mean, I don't know Paul's situation. I know Nick is, like, constantly working. I'm constantly working because I'm a freelance musician. I have to take every gig that I can get. And I forget what your initial question was, but I...
No, really talking about that organizing, moving up into it. No, you're right on the money. This is awesome.
Yeah, one of the things that I remember was, one of the things that really struck me during the public comment period was how much they were like, oh no, we've been transparent. And it's like, if you've been transparent, then why is it that the non-consolidated schools didn't have a single email about this? The students didn't have a single communication about this plan, which does affect all of us, even though we're, you know, even though Westchester is the quote unquote best school or whatever nonsense. It's just the closest one to a major city. And
yeah, I mean, for example, like, Judy Schwenk voted for the cut of 150 jobs in her goddamn county.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? That's, like, awful.
Just an example. It affects the whole state. You know, Kutztown's not getting consolidated.
Yeah, it does. It affects everyone. And I remember what started it in Westchester was Nick and a friend, a fellow grad student, wrote an article about it. And then someone in the PSL was like, hey, we should really jump on this. But the plans to start consolidating happened, like, that ball was rolling a whole entire year prior to that article popping up in Westchester. And that's on purpose. That's totally
right. Like,
that's the least transparent you can be.
Well, look, and I would even argue this has been going on even farther, longer than this. I mean, this is the guy who was brought in because he was the cleanup hitter, and they knew that this guy was going to be able to take it through because he had Bill Gates, right, in his resume, that he came out of that Silicon Valley thing. He knew how to talk to people in positions of authority and power and make them feel like they were special, and so that he could build up the resume so he can go launch his whatever, you know, transform higher ed, you know, think tank that he's about to do, I'm sure, right? And probably dragging some faculty members along with him, I would probably bet, to try to do that. But, you know, this is how I saw this guy. And, you know, I was on vacation for a couple of weeks with my family, and we haven't, like, you know, COVID, we haven't been anywhere, my kids, like, all this stuff. And so while we were gone, I replay some stuff that I had recorded some, you know, several years ago. Back in 2018, we did a documentary with Colleen Bradley, who was the former vice president of administration and finance at Westchester University, where she blew the whistle about the budgetary practices and the kind of, you know, borderline fraud that was going on within PASHI and the state system, which, again, nobody would pick up and run with, but we did, right? So to replay that as a part of ways of reminding people, right, that this has been going on for a long time. They just finally got their ducks in a row enough to pull the trigger to see what goes on. Nick, you're
going ahead. Yeah. Well, yeah, what I wanted to say was, like, I agree so much with that idea that it's been going on for so long, or really just to say that, like, this is what like, not like that this is what the system being built was intended to have happen to an extent, but in the sense of how everything was created with the state system, this is sort of the intended result, in the sense that, you know, we have a board of governors. They are unelected. They are just appointed. You have some elected officials, and these are not people, you know, who really have much to do with education, let alone PASHI for many of them. You know, of course, a lot of them are from the Council of Trustees of these various institutions. Not like I, as a Westchester University student, have any idea who is on the Council of Trustees, nor does any student have any idea what any of that is. But, you know, it doesn't, like, as I'll say, it doesn't matter whether it was Chancellor Greenstein or who knows who, right? Because they were just appointing someone to be the person to do this. And he was the perfect person to help do this with his team, with different consulting firms, helping to create these videos and things that, you know, I found with like a fun right to know request. I haven't found that much with it. Done a little bit of digging. As I know, I sent to you, you know, your show was mentioned. Your show was mentioned.
That's right.
And I will say, I really want to just go digging to see if, like, myself, I was ever mentioned, maybe if Paul or Monica. It would be fun. It would be fun. But no, just to like say, this is built for this because we have been underfunding these schools. So then the only idea that comes out from this neoliberal governing rationality is the idea to cut, to consolidate, to get rid of things. And it's not the idea that we've been underfunding these schools, which is why we, you know, are continuing to saddle students with debt and, like, you know, cut faculty jobs or benefits or whatever. And what we're doing instead is filling those holes with that, like, student debt or cutting, or with donors. And does the public have any say in terms of what the donor money is used for? No. They get the say. That's why in Westchester University, they're building a fountain. Why do we need a fountain, okay? I really question that. I know, like, so many other things that that money could probably be used better for if we actually had some sort of democratic system to say what the money should be used for. But no, that's not how this sort of whole thing goes. So then
don't you know that, like, education is a commodity and you've got to beautify the campus.
That's exactly why we have, you know, all the nice Gothic infrastructure. I mean, that's exactly why, you know, we totally, you know, I don't know, we needed the hammocks. How else are you going to sell it? It's an experience, and all that it is you paying money to go on the ride. And the ride exists just for the ride, and then you get off, and then you realize, oh, shit, what's in my backpack? Oh, is that like $20,000 in debt? Oh, that's nice. That's great.
No, but it's also, don't forget, it's probably also the, you know, the free insulated tumbler and branded Slack you got when you first joined, right?
Yeah, and hey, wait, why are these college students complaining? They got the tumbler, they got like 10 free t-shirts. You know, they got some of them were banana going out day and partying. Banana day, you know, like fun things that happen. Aren't you happy? You know, like,
well,
I don't care.
That's just it. Well, you know, I mean, Paul, you know, when I first met you at Kutztown, I knew that that was the one thing that you had come to Kutztown for primarily was because of the Golden Bear swag that you would probably get. Seriously, I mean, I know that this is the kind of stuff that frustrates the living hell out of you. And especially, you know, we see duplicated almost that you've already mentioned this, right? We duplicated in the Board of Governors and the Chancellor's Office what we see really at kind of at Kutztown University, right? So take us into kind of like your angle on all this.
So, you know, kind of in the broadest strokes possible, the issue at Kutztown and across the entire state system is a lack of representation. Staff, faculty, students, they are not the ones with any sort of say in how anything is done at the university or in PASHI. Like at Kutztown, we have, you know, basically Hawkinson and his cronies making all the decisions, and then they get to choose the trustees, and, you know, the students are left in the dark a lot of the times. And the simple representation that we are allotted, you know, student government, they are not able or willing a lot of the times to fight, because they get their power from the administration. And the only way they get to do things is if the administration okays it. They would never split, because they can't, because they're nothing without that. They rely on each other. So we have that issue, and then that leaves everybody else in the dark, like I said. And the only thing then we were able to do is, you know, be disruptive and use our voices and stand up for what we know is right. You know, my big thing at Kutztown is trying to implement a system, and this, you know, will take years and years and years to happen if it ever does. This has to, hopefully KUA is a much longer fight than, you know, when I graduate in a year. But I would like to see the student government and the president's office, the administration, kind of put in place a referendum. So they would basically legislate, and then we would vote on everything that affects, you know, anybody. I think in our demand letter, which we've talked about in the past, mm-hmm. it says anything more than like 5% of students, and it's a referendum vote, right? And that gives the power directly to the people that it affects, directly the people that are spending that goddamn money, right, to go to the schools. And then we also say that staff and faculty should vote, because that's their livelihoods. And a lot of the times those people, the working class people, they know how stuff runs better. They know how to get stuff to be better than the people up at the top, just because they simply don't have the experience and they have ulterior motives. That, you know, that's kind of the big problem. And then that manifests itself, like we've been talking about, in, you know, installing new buildings, installing a $2.5 million soccer field, you know, that never gets used for anything, or, you know, in the case of Kutztown, while buildings are languishing and dorms don't have air conditioning, and there's mold in some of the buildings, and, you know, the list goes on and on and on, and not proper ventilation in most of them. So I think the answer to that, the big answer, is true representation. And then at the level of PASHE, you know, that could look like something similar. But the first step is making those goddamn Board of Governors members, whether it be by a vote they get voted in, so they're directly held accountable, or they at least feel like they have to listen to us, because clearly right now they do not feel like they have to listen to us at all.
Well, right? You know,
I think...
Go ahead, sorry.
I think they all voted unanimously, Monica said, to, like, kind of show us who's boss in a way, but it also reinforces their power, right, when they do that too.
Let me say this though, because this is something that both came up with in your referendum. This is like, these are kind of like, you know, individual conversations I had with some folks at Kutztown and things like about when you guys were bringing that stuff out, and similar to what just happened here, even though they voted unanimously, right? And, you know, I had a couple conversations with people, it doesn't matter who really at this point, but it's like, and they were saying, well, about this referendum, well, you know, you've heard this kind of thing before, well, is that actually going to happen, are they going to do this, and blah blah blah. And my point was this, is like, look, it's true, right, that if they have a referendum at this point, there's no way in hell that the administration at Kutztown University at this point, right, is going to, like, take that as, oh, well, they decided this, well, we can't do what we're going to do. But what it does, right, is it lays down a marker, right? It says, mm-hmm. we had the referendum, all the students said no, and you did it anyways. And then that becomes another opportunity to organize. The same thing is true about that unanimous vote. Is because if it hadn't been for the work of all of you, right, there wouldn't have been, right, you know, whatever, like 90 minutes of public comments, right, for every Board of Governors meeting, and that were something like 98% opposed, right? And you wouldn't have seen, like, when students and, you know, and faculty and the union demanded this too as well, and some legislators demanded this as well, basically say, you can't make claims about what students want without showing us your data. You keep on saying what shows you. And what do they have in the final report? Oh, turns out that they did survey students. And guess what? 1% of incoming students, 4% of existing students. And they cherry picked stuff from there. Right. So, I mean, the whole idea about organizing in my mind, right, is kind of what, you know, what I've been saying to people all along is like, look at what they're doing. This is what, this is how direct action gets the goods. Right. It's like, it doesn't get the goods necessarily all the time in the particular moment. But frankly, I mean, this movement that you all have helped create has gone from 0 to 60 in less than 6 months. Right. Yeah. And now we have concrete evidence that these people do not care about what faculty and students and the broader public say, and they will lie to get their way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. If we didn't do anything, you know, we at least were able to put that stake in the ground and say, this is what the people want, and this is what you're doing. Yeah. And that takes a lot of work, and it's hard to do. And we were able to successfully do that. So, and, you know, I think that was definitely a win.
And we were also able to get the chancellor to, you know, specifically say, no, not layoffs, employment reductions. You know, I felt so good, you know, him saying that, or hearing the dismissal of public comments by Representative Roy saying, well, you know, I heard the public comments, and I think about 80% of them were people who work at the university or are students. Huh, I don't know. I guess they're not the public, kind of thing. Like, what? Like, you know, but go figure. Or, you know, or as you just said, Kevin, of like the, I'll say like the fake data that was pulled out of, you know, God knows how, for saying, oh no, like students are actually, you know, excited about this. And, you know, my real question is, how did they frame these questions? Because from what I heard from some of the framing, it does it in a sleight of hand way where it's saying, you're, you know, with these courses being online, you're going to have a reduced cost. Do you want to take that? Well, let's see. We're underfunding higher education, so I don't really have the money to pay for it to begin with. And in this capitalist society, I kind of need to find ways to cut corners. So I think I'm going to have to do this in order to get an education. So I guess I'm for it. Like,
right. I guess I'm going to do what I've got to do. Yep, yeah. Exactly. Well, I do know that I was very pleased that, you know, at the very least, you know, we got two new kind of personalities out of this all. We got like fake Keisha, the one student who was made up by Chancellor Greenstein. And we also got, let's see, fake Keisha, and I'm forgetting
her
friend.
It was fake Stephanie.
I was looking for fake Stephanie.
And what I loved, so I went on this podcast that I listened to and talked about Pashy, and I pointed out how the closed caption said something like "Kill us Megatron" or something, and it was supposed to be like "Cal U Megatronics" or whatever. But no, like in all seriousness, one of the things that frightened me, and this is especially because I myself utilized the counseling center at Westchester University, was them showing in this little clip, which I'm pretty certain was done by the Bravo Group, which actually is right around the corner from my house. But they showed in one of the clips that the student was getting counseling virtually. Now, I, you know, maybe it's just a preference, right? But I really do think that there's something to be said that, you know, if we want to have counselors, we might want to actually have them on campus. Because it seems like, you know, the continuous model is, we'll move it online, it's going to be cheaper. Move it online, right. It's going to be cheaper. Move it online. And
get rid of people, adjunctify the world, right?
Exactly.
Well, I think that, you know, and here the example I give to as well on the counseling thing is like, look, I'm not opposed to a counseling app, but that should be as a way of expanding an already staffed counseling center. Right. It's like if you find ways to reach out, right, that are ways of reaching out to students who might be in distress, right, more power to you. But that is not an either or choice. Right. That is a way of, say, building out the reach of counseling, not replacing, right, actual counselors with, you know, hourly paid minimum wage folks on the other end of the thing. So now, again, I started with you, Monica, and I'm going to start with the big question now here, because I know we're getting kind of closing in on things. But so from where you sit, you know, there are some folks who feel like, okay, this is, you know, we lost, right? We lost this fight. And then now everyone's like hanging their head and things like this. That's not me. And that's not, I think, a lot of you all and the folks at work you've been doing here. But take us a little bit in the direction of, what do you see kind of going forward from here? I mean, using what the organizing that you've already been doing, I mean, you and everyone that you've been working with have been doing, what do you see as some possible directions about kind of where this struggle goes from here?
Well,
yeah, I know, right? No pressure.
Well, first I want to address there is this kind of defeatist air that I think I've seen from many people, mostly online. I think everyone that we've been organizing with, we're all a little bit tired, and so we're all taking a breather.
Absolutely.
But yep. At least, like, in our circle, we're ready to go. We're ready to fight back. 'Cause here's the thing. I am disabled. I'm autistic. These are two facts that I have spouted to the whole world, along with my phone number and my email, for the last few months. And if I, I think of it as, like, if I gave up every time someone just told me to, I would never be where I am today. And I think, like, being a minority, being queer, being all these oppressed communities, being in part of all these oppressed communities has really taught me that if you value something like education, like, I'm a scholarship student. My parents are immigrants. They came over with $20 and two suitcases and that was it. And, if they hadn't persisted, I wouldn't be here. And I'm a musician, and my lessons were through scholarship. And so education is something that's really important to me. And if it's something that we're going to value as a society, then we need to fight for it. And so, no, it's not over, because if the moment you say it's over, the moment you give ground, then they're the capitalists, the people who, have the power currently, not always, because we're going to take it back, who currently have the power, they're just going to take up that much more space. And, that's just, can't live your life that way, I guess. So I guess that's my little soapbox spiel to all the people who I've kind of seen online being like, it's over, it's over. It's not over. With regards to incoming plans, like I said, I think a lot of us are taking a little bit of a breather and we're reassessing. I really can't say right now what we have in the works, just because, they have ears everywhere, and I
sure
really don't want to give it away what we're gonna do next. But it's not nothing. We've got 6 weeks left, I think, until the school year, and then we're back in person after two years. And if anyone's listening who doesn't know me, I've been in and out of this Westchester school on leaves of absence for medical stuff, for about, I think this is the 9th calendar year going on. And so I've been around for a long time, and it's going to be a lot different organizing in person when you can just walk up to a stranger and hand them a flyer than trying to, like, all of this organizing that we've done in the last two months and a week or something, 9 weeks, we've gone across the whole state. We've reached people in all corners of the state, and that was all online. And just think of how much more connected we are now. Nick and I, we didn't know Paul like 2 months ago. He just came to one of the Patchy Defender meetings and he was dope. And so we were like, okay, cool. Here's a person that we now know at Kutztown. I think one of the biggest successes and what we really set out to do in the last couple months is just be more connected with people who care about the cause, people who value education, people who are ready to stand and fight back. And like I said, I can't really give you specifics, maybe in a couple months, but...
Oh, believe me, I'll be like rigging you up again. You can right count on that.
Now, it's a little too early to kind of show our hand, but I mean, we're not going to give up. And when we go back on campus, how many people does Westchester have, Nick?
Like 15,000? 17,000-ish. And you know, I'm going to, even if I'm not going to show my hand, I'm still going to bluff it. That's what I wanted to say.
Oh, I'm very bad at bluffing, so I just don't. That's part of being autistic, I think. But yeah, that's what I got for you for now.
No, good. So what do you see going forward, Nick?
Yeah, I mean, I somewhat to like echo and expand on what Monica was saying. I mean, I see us at least attempting to, you know, reach out to students on these other campuses and to, you know, get students involved and aware in, like, you know, what is going on with PASHE. You know, especially getting folks to understand how their current situations, like, are directly aligned with the underfunding of these institutions, with the, you know, continued cuts and consolidations, with, you know, this continued idea that students should be in debt for wanting an education, of how that directly ties to your conditions now. And I very much want to, you know, make certain that PASHE Defenders as a whole reaches out and, you know, gets, you know, potentially a group of students at each one of, you know, these campuses to be able to have this sort of, like, you know, network connection and such. You know, we're going to see, you know, what will happen, as Monica said, and I very much need it. Like, you know, we're all tired in many different ways. I'm working like multiple jobs. You know, I was cutting grass just like they were cutting public higher education. I'm doing that tomorrow, but I was not doing that today. But of course they're cutting public higher. So sorry, it's too funny. So, but no, like, you know, with that, I really at least want to take some time like for rest and relaxation for like all of us in that way. You know, I know that, PASHE Defenders, like the meetings are sort of on a hiatus just for that, like sort of fact. You know, but as well, you know, just really seeing how we can get students together and help students like organize and share like this knowledge. You know, because to sort of echo what the chancellor says, we are the ones who fund these universities at like 60 to 75% or whatever the like total cost or like, you know, total operating funds of PASHE, if I'm going to like put it to that. So really, you know, we need to find the best ways to leverage our power collectively and get them to understand that we are the ones that are in control. Because, you know, just as like it could happen in a classroom, yes, your professor has individual power over you, but if all of you in the classroom say, no, we're doing it this way, you could do that. You could, like, you know, you could maybe convince slash push a professor to move a due date, or to maybe say, no, we're not doing the test like right after the Eagles game, or so, I don't know, me making jokes, but with things like that, because realistically there is power in numbers, and that's what needs to be shown, because they don't care about the numbers of all of us. They care to just pick us apart and say, no, you're wrong, and we have the numbers to prove it. But the thing is we have the numbers to organize and to really do stuff. I don't know.
Absolutely. And, you know, Paul, and you're looking at just about about a month from now, is that students are already going to be kind of moving back on campus, right? And, I, you know, one of the things I've right from the get-go with KU activists that I've always found so impressive about what you all have done is really given thought to, you know, the community of that you're organizing with, right? And, you know, the kind of almost of the, like the whole person, right? Really taking into consideration what it needs to be there for each other and to build something that was sustainable, right, over time. So, you know, as you're getting ready to kind of head back to good old KU, right, and kind of move back in and prep for that, what's that year ahead look like for you?
Well, I will tell you, we already have an action plan There's no information about it, but it's planned for very close to the start of the semester.
I'll make sure. I'm going to make sure that I'm going to tag the Bravo group and the Posse folks, because I want to make it really easy for them. Because, you know, I totally, hate it when
They Baker, try to monitor. Baker and Tilly.
You got it all.
What are the other ones? Ernst and Young. You got to tag them. You got it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you got Cody Jones and you got Eric Heisler.
Fun conversations with Cody.
Well, anyways, I mean, it was funny because it was right after you were on, KU activists, when you're about to come on, to, you know, talk about potential actions, and you guys were organizing around kind of the racist cop on campus. That's when they were like, hey, you guys better check this out. I'll let them know.
You know, we won. We reached out to the chancellor and he refused to help us, but we still won. We didn't need him. So, you know. But like I said, we already have stuff planned for this coming semester. I actually want to talk to you privately about some stuff, so I'll be sure to reach out to you at some point. But we already have stuff planned, and just kind of about Patchy, it'll be amazing to get back in person and to talk to people in person. Like, I know, you know, Patchy Defenders has been difficult because this has been happening over the summer. A lot of students don't want to think about school during the summer, rightfully so. And besides the fact they have super busy lives with jobs and stuff, I feel like once we get back in person and start to be able to talk to people, and this is kind of mirroring what others have said, it'll make things a hell of a lot easier, and it'll make us a hell of a lot bigger. And the same thing with KUA. You know, I can't wait to be able to have meetings like in houses and like bring food over and, you know, have fun and, you know, just get to know these people.
Exactly.
And, you know, we were able to build a group of like 80 students during a pandemic when everything was online via Zoom. Like, that's amazing. I can't imagine what we're going to be able to do going forward and how we're going to be able to help the community. And I, you know, to kind of bring it back to Patchy and looking forward, I don't know what exactly path this is going to take. I think we've been able to show that the people are not being listened to, and we have thousands and thousands of thousands of angry, disaffected people throughout the state, you know, and that's kind of the best thing for organizing. Like I said at the start of the show, we were able to show people that they're not being listened to, so now let's take the next step. And there's a lot of fun things we can do as part of that next step, and hopefully some of the other organizations will join us. You know, that's really what I'm hoping for, because I know some of those union members are angry. You know, and, you know, maybe it's time to
this one
try
right
some
here.
Other. Yeah. Maybe it's time to try some other ways of getting stuff done.
100%. Well, listen, Paul, Nick, Monica, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. And like I said, I'm going to be kind of reaching out to y'all again because hopefully other will bring some other folks on from the organizations too as well that you're connected with, because you know, the more folks, you know, one of the things, I'll step back and to do a little kind of meta here just about kind of Raging Chicken from the get-go, is like one of the things that when I, you know, first set out to start Raging Chicken back in 2011, this is like in the aftermath of the Wisconsin uprising, as Occupy was getting going, was saying like, you know, look, there's an enormous gap between like the, especially on the left, of kind of from people who are interested in kind of getting stories that are going forward and activists that are doing amazing kind of work, and the ability to reach people. Right. It seems, you know, we have these national publications, these national shows that are focused on national politics, but there's very little in between. Right. And so looking for spaces that we can bring folks on like this one, where, you know, folks are actually going to, we can do what we can, right, to amplify the work that's going on, but also bringing more and more people into the conversation, so you get to hear more voices, right? I mean, this is something that, you know, Paul, this is the shout out to you guys again too as well, at KU Activists, is that it's one of the things that you've been very conscious of from the get-go, right? You want to make sure that you have an opportunity to talk with the organizations and bring more people forward, so it's not just like one or two people, they're here. So
yeah, absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
That's fantastic stuff. So listen, here's what we're going to do. We're going to, I'm going to come back with some, you know, some closing comments. If there's anybody that wants to call in, you have any questions, you have any thoughts, additional stuff, you could do it after this one little kind of quick musical break, that, Monica, Nick, and Paul, if you want to stick around, great. But, I'll say, you know, hey, thank you so much for being here, for taking the time out tonight. And you know, really the organizing work that you did, because it's these kind of things that I think gives people a tremendous amount of, you know, a reference point basically about the kind of work that we need to be doing. So thank you all for coming on the show tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Hey, you got it. All right. Too. Yeah, you got it. So I'm going to play this like funky little kind of transition tune. And then when we come back, that's going to be the kind of after the break time. And I'll have a little bit of kind of closing thoughts. And if you do want to call in, again, information is right there in the show notes. If you just scroll down, look at the comments down in YouTube, it gives you a link there. But I'll tell you right here, if you just kind of turn off your YouTube, right, turn down the sound for YouTube, you can even close it out and just go to riverside.fm/studio/out-decoup, C-O-U-P, like decoup, hyphen live. You can go there. But if you go, you're already listening to YouTube, you just click on that link and you can join us here. If you have comments that you want to bring in, I'll leave the YouTube will continue to be streaming. So say Christopher and others who are kind of joining us on YouTube, if you've got other things you want to throw in there, please feel free. So here's the funky transition tune, and we'll be back right after this. And there you go. And that's a funky transition tune. That really gives me the opportunity to kind of see it when I'm doing the editing. So, but also kind of a little bit of a signal. And so we're going to be bringing some more of that going forward. So let me just say a few things as we have kind of closing some of the stuff out in comments. And then if take any comments that you may have, and I'll ask for kind of any additional closing thoughts for folks who are sticking around here too as well. You know, one of the things that I know I've talked about this a lot on Out to Coop before, and both on the live show, both on our Friday show, multiple shows over the course of the years. But one of the things that happened in 2016 when ABSCUF, our faculty union, went on strike, is that it showed people what power looked like. Right. And it showed them what power looked like. And it turned out that it wasn't what they thought it was. And let me tell you what I mean by that is that, you know, you go back to Saul Alinsky, and Saul Alinsky, you know, said one of the things that happens on the left is that you're afraid of certain words, right? The left and liberals are afraid of things like power, right? The word power is scary, right? Because, you know, we're brought up with this idea that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, right? I mean, how many times have you heard that in your life? I know I've heard it more than once, right? And so, but it has a way of kind of equating power with like badness or evil or corruption. But really, I mean, what is democracy? I mean, democracy is ruled by people, right? By all of us, right? What is kind of like, you know, every kind of socialist aspiration that's been there, it's about kind of collectively decision-making, right? Not kind of having to beg, right, for our futures, but to be an active participant and agent in constructing our futures, right? I always remember Paulo Freire, right? Paulo Freire was he's a Brazilian educator who was really instrumental in my own kind of thinking and life. And he would work with working class folks in kind of northern Brazil, and wrote this book, Pedagogy of the Oppressed, Pedagogy of Liberation. There's a whole bunch of these books. But in this Pedagogy for Critical Consciousness, he has this moment in there where he's making a distinction between adaptation, right? And obviously now I'm going to lose the other. Adaptation and basically agency, right? Or like being a subject versus, you know, having to adapt. And he's saying basically, look, animals adapt, right? And he doesn't mean this by saying animals are therefore like, you know, unliving, unthinking creatures, right? You're just saying that part of what it means to be kind of an animal is to be kind of adapt to the environment as it's given, right? And again, we have to problematize this even more now as like there's more and more research comes out, for example, about crows, about how crows are, for example, self-aware, right? So they remember and they know that they know that they know, right? I kid you not, right? Crows are freaking fascinating animals. Anyways, that's a sidetrack. But as a general principle, he's saying that, you know, when human beings, that's one of the things that kind of, for better or for worse, is that we kind of create the environments in which we inhabit. Right, that we think ahead about and imagine different possibilities, and then we create them, right? And which futures get created has everything to do with who has the power, right? I mean, the fact that, you know, Sir Richard Branson just went to space last week and Jeff Bezos is going to space tomorrow, right? And Elon Musk is sending cars to Mars, right? That shows you whose vision of the future is getting enacted. Right? They have the resources, the vision, and the means by which to make that future enacted. But of course, it's for themselves. If you read like Jeff Bezos's interview about why he wants to go to space, it's like this. I'm listening to like my 12-year-old self talking about my like what I would love to do in the future. Right? And it's essentially all it is. It's like me and my brother get to go to space, just like we believed when we were kids.
Right? I mean, and that's what Branson said, you know, when he was up there. He was totally like, for all the kids who want to go to space. It's like, it's not like, you know, like
and just like Greenstein, you know, I want to transform higher education. Oh, I'm so happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is, you know, and I think that, you know, when we talk about power and we talk about power, we find that, like, even when we get a small taste of collective power, of real deliberative action, collective action and direct action, right? We get a little taste of what real freedom looks like, right? We get the taste of like a future that is unwritten, not to like sound like a pop song or something, but, you know, and we get to say like, oh my God, this is so much better than the life I was just in, like, yesterday, you know?
It's yeah,
like,
and...
Go ahead, Paul, like, yeah.
And, like, it's, you know, not to sound sappy, but it is true. When you get off the picket line or, you know, you finally feel like your cause is being advocated for and you're the one doing the advocating, right? Like, that is an amazing feeling, and... It just opens up so many different doors to even thinking about what's possible. You know, like, what can we do? What can Patchy Defenders do? What can KU activists do looking forward? Because we've already won. We've all had our victories, you know, big and small. So, you know, the opportunities really are endless. We just need to work on getting more people to kind of buy into it, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, and I think that, you know, I think that the idea that, look, I mean, there's lots of science of organizing. I don't want to make it like, you know, like lavish or something like this. But I mean, if you look at organizers who do organizing for a living, right? We know, right? There are no shortcuts, right? As the book says, right? But there's, you know, there's the organizing, there's the mechanics of organizing, there's the things that, you know, you have to do, the list to go through, the contacts you make, and all that stuff. And that's absolutely essential to actually building power long term. But there's also, I think, you know, that kind of subjective, right? Shifting ourselves from the I to the we, right? In a meaningful way, right? That gives us something to hold on to about why we do this work. Right? Why is it that we spend time doing this stuff? And there's those moments of, you know, I can tell you the moments of joy that are most memorable for me, other than like my kids being born, like the relationship with my wife, right? You know, these kind of things that are interpersonal, but those ones outside of these kind of like personal joys had everything to do with those moments in organizing, those moments in kind of like action that felt like, man, I got a taste of what could be, right? And, you know, I'm reminded one of the other interviews that I played while I was away was our first ever interview in horrible, horrible audio, by the way, but was with Noam Chomsky. Right. And Noam Chomsky talked about the essential aspect of people getting the experience of winning. Right. And people getting the experience of kind of like organizing and enacting their vision of that world, whether it's a stoplight at the at a corner that's dangerous, right? Or if it's, you know, in the in your all cases, right? If it's having rallies on every campus that is about to be consolidated, about getting people to show up in the public comments so that now we have a marker that can prove to people that they didn't listen. Right. And we can say, yes, we knew that. Right. And the trick in organizing is to find that when, you know, when we've got those moments, right? When we have those moments that we can bring the keep on coming back to them to so we remember why we do this. Right. Because, you know, the work that, you know, I'll say everybody, you know, because everybody's still here and the work that you all did, I mean, I think it's like, you know, it feels like a beginning. Right. And I kept on coming back to that is like, you know, there's I before our show on Wednesday, Cyril was asking me, Cyril Mikulenko was asking me, he's like, well, so what do you think the outcome of this is going to be? Because they were literally like going to be voting like an hour after we were recording. And I was like, oh, they're going to pass it. Right. And I said, it'll be surprising to me if it's not going to be unanimous. Right. And he was like, you know, just like Jesus Christ. He's like, you know, pissed. But, you know, both of us were talking about it. It's like, yeah, but you know what? This doesn't feel like a loss. Right. This feels like, I mean, again, there's real consequences and real kind of material consequences for what just happened and what can continue to happen. But this also felt like a win. Right. In that moment of like seeing people come together and build this. And I've told the story before about the Student Power Network, the PA Student Power Network, that had gotten off and running, before, during our kind of organizing efforts around the strike, and then it did some amazing work. And then, you know, through ridiculous kind of like infighting or whatever, that thing started falling apart, not with that network, but actually with people who were supporting the network. And that's a shame. But it's also a reminder with the work that you all are doing is that, you know, it's not just one organization, it's just one moment. It's the constant work of organizing that we're going forward. So, you know, I don't know. Thanks to all that you guys are doing. That's all I'm saying. So,
yeah,
hey,
like we're kind of at,
yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, it's okay. Like we're kind of at a crossroads right now and we can choose to give up and to say, oh, we lost this. Or we can look forward and view this as an opportunity, you know, to kind of escalate the situation. And I hope, and that's, I know the three of us on here, you know, that's, we all believe that this is, you know, just the beginning and we have to work on really pushing that and not letting the movement die. You know, like that's my plan. I would feel awful if nothing else came of this. Even for the good that we've already done. Like, we have the power. We just have to, you know, keep using it.
So here's so the random kind of like closeout question for the night is, so now that you're all taking a little time, like downtime, like, what are you doing for yourself? What kind of fun? What are the little moments that you're able to have right now? I mean, other than freaking working yourselves to the bone.
Okay, it's, I'm just going to say it's really not like downtime. Like I know that's especially true for like Monica and myself, cause we like have both like talked to each other about like our own like situations and stress and ways. And I know Paul has his own like crazinesses that he is dealing with. Right. But like, you know, it's not like, it is not even downtime. It's just like trying to have time. Like at all. And like, and also I really feel like through some of this, I have better, I don't know, taken stock of like understanding of how much I feel like interpolated into feeling like I need to use my time to be productive. And I need to fight back against that. I need to say to myself, I deserve this time for myself in that way that you were describing earlier. But I will say I am going to at least have a little bit of fun. Some high school friends and I, we're taking a trip this weekend. And then my best friend and I, a little bit, I think in like mid-August, we're going to go up to Vermont, which will be fun. So maybe I'll see Bernie Sanders and I'll get to tell him all my stories. But you're going to be a stalker.
You're going to be a Bernie stalker.
Right. Yeah. But no, also to briefly echo what Paul was saying of like this sort of like being the beginning, you know, as I'll semi-jokingly say, you know, it's just like the chancellor said, you know, this vote is not the end. It's the beginning. And, you know, to an extent, he's right in the sense that this is the beginning of his like iteration of an attack on higher education is what I would say.
Yeah.
Or at least like part of, you know, this larger beginning of like, this is how we remake things, you know, with that. And, you know, it really is for us, like, you know, doing this sort of work has been the beginning. I mean, it's at least been the beginning for me. I mean, I've been involved politically in other ways, but not as much in terms of like direct organizing and getting this taste of this. You know, as you were saying earlier, it has been, you know, like, I don't know, like exhilarating or just like, you know, a great time in general, you know, especially to meet, you know, like, or reconnect with Monica or like, you know, meet Paul and such. Like, I'm currently taking a grad class right now, and I was talking to one of my professors, like, you know, like about like all of this craziness, and, you know, they were asking me questions, whatnot, like, you know, how have you been feeling? Like, you know, what's all the stuff, whatever. And I remember early on that, like, I said, like, I don't know. I felt really like happy and like a happiness that I feel like I hadn't felt in a while. And I like specifically had mentioned, yeah, I met like, you know, this student from Kutztown, or met like these students from Clarion. And like, I don't know, it felt like good to like be a part of something greater. And really, that's what I want to, in a way, use my downtime for, is to be a part of this thing that is something greater. But in terms of actually taking a step back and like doing downtime, I don't know, maybe I should read. I really don't do that. Or maybe I have my own podcast, and I will be talking a little bit more about Pashy stuff on there. If you ever listen, look up Non-Applicable. We've had interviews with a current person who's running for Senate, who I do not like. I am going to say that on the record. But I found it to be a funny interview, and someone who I do like, and I was helping their campaign for a little bit, who is running in PA, or sorry, yeah, in PA for a rep seat. Alexandra Hunt is running against Dwight Evans in Philly. I think it's PA 3. But, you know, things like that, and talking, you know, just like you are, Kevin, about like politics and things, you know, like on like semi, like a more local ish level. And, you know, I know specifically on that, like my best friend and I, we've talked about some of our own personal experiences with things. I mean, you know, particularly framing things around like the 2020 primaries and things. And, you know, really, I do want to get back into that because I do find that fun, just like this. Right. But it really is. As I said in the beginning, to go full circle, decommodifying your time and understanding that you have control over it, even though the capitalists do kind of in a way. It's annoying. It's a whole story. No, but yeah. So sorry, I'll let someone else answer about downtime because, yeah, I've used enough of my downtime.
I'm laughing so hard over here because one of the things I hate the most is talking to other people. But also, I can't live...
Hi, Monica. Do you want to talk to...
I'm joking. Nick. I can't live in a society that is, like, utter garbage like we have right now. So I force myself to do it. And last week was the first week, I think, that we all kind of took a step back because we knew the vote was going to happen. We had our Harrisburg rally, and then it was like, now we just got to wait for the vote. And I didn't do a single Pashy-related thing all week, except I checked my school email once. And what I did instead was work for 100 hours between my three jobs. And that actually was very relaxing to not have to think about organizing. That was my step back, and I've been told that that is not self-care. And that I should try doing something else that's not being a workaholic. But I love teaching, and I was teaching a summer camp, and I have my own private students, and I work at UPS now because I have a really great union. and I need the healthcare. And so the shifts start at like 3 in the morning sometimes. So I think my next one is like 3:30 in like 7 hours. But it's been good. Ironically, the physical therapy that I can't afford to get for my sprained wrist, I've gotten sort of by loading trucks at UPS. And my wrist has gotten a lot better. But man, when you say that organizing is real work, like, yeah, it really is. It just takes it out of you.
Yeah.
And that's that's my funny, not so funny little thing about work.
No, definitely. Well, and I know, Paul, that, you know, when, yeah, let me know when you're going to be headed back into Kutztown, because before the semester starts, I'd love to, I mean, we'll talk even before then, but before the semester starts, it'd be great to just to kind of like, just to get together and chat and like, because I haven't, I've been to Kutztown once, right? This past year, maybe twice, maybe once before it all went bomb, but I was like, and I have to say, this is a, this kind of goes back to a conversation we had before we went on tonight, but it's been, I've had, you know, Kutztown has taken a lot from me from a job that I wanted more than anything else, to a career and a profession and all the stuff that I just loved, to turn that into something that felt like just like mechanical and difficult to go to sucked. So you know, and the one thing that's been good about this past year, which I kind of said a little bit before the show, was that you know, it got me away from the garbage, right? The daily garbage. But I've missed the classroom and the students tremendously. So it's, you know, for me, it's kind of going back and kind of with a different set of like, well, you know what? They didn't miss me while I was gone, so right? Why don't I just focus on what matters, right? And not the garbage half the time. So that's been something of its own right, but definitely. Oh, you're on mute, Paul. Sorry.
I'm real excited to get back, and I think, not, you know, socially it'll be really good for me, as well as, you know, for the movement and stuff, and, you know, just, yeah, that'll be cool. And I just recently got like fully physically cleared from my surgery back at the beginning of the summer. So that's good. And that means that I'll be able, you know, in the meantime, I'll be able to work on really getting stronger. I can start going back to physical therapy, and hopefully by the time moving happens, I can, you know, walk around campus and do all sorts of fun stuff. So that's kind of what's taking up my time. But really, I guess I really love doing this type of organizing stuff. Like, it is draining and it is tiring, but like, I want to thank Nick publicly. After your Right to Know request, I decided to write my own to Kutztown. So actually, I should probably, Kevin, I meant to email you before I sent it in, but then I just sent it in to see if you wanted to add anything to it. But there'll be some fun stuff in there, I'm sure. So we'll get that back right before the start of classes, and then with any luck, I mean, hopefully not, but what I'm suspecting is we're going to get some stupid email from Hawkinson to Chancellor Greenstein that's like, how do we silence KUA and passion about it? Just something completely ridiculous, you know, and that's kind of what I'm expecting, because that's how good those people are in my mind. And, you know, so that'll be interesting. So thank you, Nick, for putting the idea in my head and doing that. It once I got writing it, it was pretty quick, so that was cool. And just looking forward and like just brainstorming ideas for what KUA can do in conjunction with Apache Defenders in the future.
Well, I want to say, I want to say quickly a thanks to Cyril, because he contacted me with someone who helped me like writing this Right to Know request, which I will say, we got some fun stuff. I mean, like, it's fun to just look at some random texts or emails between some of these folks. You know, I definitely think that, you know, it'll be interesting in the future, and like what Paul is doing, and like trying to utilize that as a way to find information, to build power, to show people like this is what is going on in that way. And I also want to say on the, you know, if folks have downtime, I highly, you know, highly suggest, you know, maybe watch, I think it was fun, Paul talking in front of the Board of Governors and, you know, taking over like the screen or this and that, you know, and just saying to them, you know, like, this is what I have to do every day. And that it was a fun experience in all honesty. And so, I appreciated listening.
I'm still so mad that I missed all of the... We were on, like, opposite ones. So I missed all the fun ones where everyone else was on, and I was on all the boring ones because those are my teaching hours.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know, I'm an amputee, and, you know, part of the plan is that, you know, some people might have to commute between campuses. And I was going through, you know, kind of the issues of having to put on my leg and take it off 4 times. A day to, you know, get in and out of my car and drive 2 hours and be late for class. So, you know, just, it was ridiculous, but at the same time, you know, I think sometimes you need to show that this stuff needs to be laughed at because it's just ridiculous. And then another thing that we did just about the public comments is we encourage people to run the clock a lot, and I think I maybe did it the longest. I think I was talking for like 13 minutes, but so that was a good time too.
I was sitting in the room game. Watching the group chat just like cheer Paul on, being like, I wish I could be doing this, but I can't right now. I'm so mad. I'm so glad you guys did it though. It was great.
Oh man, that's the awesome stuff. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Monica.
Oh, I was gonna say, when you were talking about one of the joys of organizing, I remember at the Harrisburg rally, Paul wasn't sure if he was able to come, and he did, but he there was a little confusion about where to park, and so I just suddenly looked to my right and I was like, oh my god, it's Paul. I didn't even see him standing there. And that was definitely a moment of joy for me, I think, where I was like, oh my god. I think Nick was talking and I totally just talked over him and was like, we have someone from Kutztown. And Nick was like, looked at me like, I'm talking right now. And I was like, oh, sorry. And I did want to say one more thing about our plans for the future. One thing that I wasn't aware of prior to this was that President Hannah, the president of Bloomsburg and then Lockhaven and Mansfield now, one thing that we are definitely going to do that I want to say publicly is that we are going to hold him accountable for... I mean, this man has sexual harassment allegations against him and he got promoted? So... that's one thing we're not going to let go. And I think that's all I'll say about that. But
well, and I'll say, let me know when you move forward with that and we'll talk.
Oh, great.
Cause he was a dean at Kutztown.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
All right. We'll talk.
Yep. Definitely. I'll leave it there. That seems like a good note to end on there.
I will say, to be a little bit lighter in some ways, Monica, it is Bloomhaven Field, I think is the new name that we still know. Or Calaclare Borough. Calaclare Borough? I think that's the name we're going.
I thought it, I could no, be no, wait. I thought it was Lock. I would Lock no, no, Man's no. Blooms.
Lock Man's Blooms. I liked it.
All I know is that Bloomsburg is definitely not going to be the main campus, but it definitely is the main campus.
Okay, now you're making me think, and this is totally like...
Okay, you know, I'm sorry. Sorry,
no, no. It's no, past no, no. Is we need to? I know it is past thinking time, but I still have some grad work that I'm trying to do.
Ew.
But no. Is I need to make a Twitter poll with some names, potential names. Oh my gosh!
There you go. There you go. There you go. As I spill coffee all over myself, that's great. Good. All right. Well, hey, you know, really, thank y'all for kind of staying on tonight, and I really appreciate the discussion and so much of the work that y'all have done. And you know, again, You'll be hearing from me certainly more. I've been kind of following the work, even though the summer has gotten a lot kind of like busier than I would have liked. But I've been following everything that's been going on. And then hopefully when my kids are back in school and, I'm on campus again, then a bunch of kind of the time that can't be set aside, that kind of frees up a little bit into kind of some workspace. So that's going to be good. So. Well, thank you all for kind of sticking on the show tonight. We kind of really appreciate it. Want to remind everybody that you can help support this show. You can go to patreon.com/rcpress and you become a patron for as little as $5 a month. I mean, think about it. It's like the price of a good beer once a month, right? I mean, there you go. But the other ways that you can help out the show. Make sure you head on over to our YouTube channel if you're not there already, and make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make sure you hit the like button for the stream and hit that little notification bell so that you know every time that we go live and you can help kind of join the show. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I appreciate all of you out there who are giving what you can to the fight for freedom, for the struggle, for justice, and to bring about equality for all. Here you go. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder. See ya!